Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Part 1, Chapter 4. Hideous music and the sound of many shotguns. Rude vibes on a Saturday evening in Vegas. We finally got into the suite around dusk, and my attorney was immediately on the phone to room service, ordering 4 club sandwiches, 4 shrimp cocktails, a quart of rum, and 9 fresh grapefruits. Vitamin C, he explained. We'll need all we can get. I agreed. By this time, the drink was beginning to cut the acid, and my hallucinations were down to a tolerable level. The room service waiter had a vaguely reptilian cast to his features, but I was no longer seeing huge pterodactyls lumbering around the corridors in pools of fresh blood. The only problem now was a gigantic neon sign outside the window, blocking our view of the mountains. Millions of colored balls running around on a very complicated track, strange symbols and filigree giving off a loud hum. Look outside, I said. Why? There's a big machine in the sky. Some kind of electric snake coming straight at us. Shoot it, said my attorney. Not yet, I said. I want to study its habits. He went over to the corner and began to pull on a chain to close the drapes. Look, he said, you've got to stop this talk about snakes and leeches and lizards and that stuff. It's making me sick. Don't worry, I said. Worry? Jesus, I almost went crazy down there in the bar. They'll never let us back in that place. Not after your scene at the press table. What scene? You bastard, he said. I left you alone for 3 minutes. You scared the shit out of those people, waving that goddamn Marlin spike around and yelling about reptiles. You're lucky I came back in time. They were ready to call the cops. I said you were only drunk and that I was taking you up to your room for a cold shower. Hell, the only reason they gave us the press passes was to get you out of there. He was pacing around nervously. Jesus, that scene straightened me right out. I must have some drugs. What have you got with the mescaline? The kit bag, I said. He opened the bag and ate 2 pellets while I got the tape machine going. Maybe you should only eat 1 of these, he said. The acid's still working on you. I agreed. We have to go back out to the track before dark, I said. But we have time to watch the TV news. Let's carve up this grapefruit and make a fine wine punch, a fine rum punch. Maybe toss in a blotter. Where's the car? We gave it to somebody in the parking lot, he said. I have the ticket in my briefcase. What's the number? I'll have them call down. I'll call down and have them watch the bastard. Get rid of that dust and grime. Good idea, he said, but he couldn't find the ticket. Well, we're fucked, I said. We'll never convince them to give us that car without proof. He thought for a moment, then picked up the phone and asked for the garage. This is Dr. Gonzo in 850, he said. I seem to have lost my parking stub for that red convertible I left with you, but I want the car washed and ready to go in 30 minutes. Can you send up a duplicate stub? What? Oh, well, that's fine. He hung up and reached for the hash pipe. No problem, he said. That man remembers my face. That's good, I said. They probably have a big net ready for us when we show up. He shook his head. As your attorney, I advise you not to worry about me. The TV news was about the Laos invasion, a series of horrifying disasters. Explosions and twisted wreckage, men fleeing in terror, Pentagon generals babbling insane lies. Turn that shit off, screamed my attorney. Let's get out of here. A wise move. Moments after we picked up the car, my attorney went into a drug coma and ran a red light on Main Street before I could bring us under control. I propped him up in the passenger seat and took the wheel myself, feeling fine, extremely sharp. All around me in traffic, I could see people talking and I wanted to hear what they were saying, all of them, but the shotgun mic was in the trunk and I decided to leave it there. Las Vegas is not the kind of town where you want to drive down Main Street aiming a black bazooka-looking instrument at people. Turn up the radio. Turn up the tape machine. Look into the sunset up ahead. Roll the windows down for a better taste of the cool desert wind. Ah, yes. This is what it's all about. Total control now. Tooling along the main drag on a Saturday night in Las Vegas. 2 good old boys in a fire apple red convertible. Stoned, ripped, twisted, good people. Great God, what is this terrible music? The battle hymn of Lieutenant Callie. As we go marching on, when I reach my final campground in that land beyond the sun, and the great commander asks me, what did he ask you, Rusty? Did you fight or did you run? And what did you tell him, Rusty? We responded with their rifle. We responded to their rifle fire with everything we had. No, I can't be hearing this. It must be the drug. I glanced over at my attorney, but he was staring up at the sky, and I could see that his brain had gone off to that campground beyond the sun. Thank Christ he can't hear this music, I thought. It would drive him into a racist frenzy. Mercifully, the song ended, but my mood was already shattered, and now the fiendish cactus juice took over, plunging me into a subhuman funk as we suddenly came up on the turnoff to the Mint Gun Club. 1 mile, the sign said. But even a mile away, I could hear the crackling scream of two-stroke bike engines winding out, and then coming closer, I heard another sound. Shotguns. No mistaking that flat, hollow boom. I stopped the car. What the hell is going on down there? I rolled up the windows and eased down the gravel road. Hunched low on the wheel, until I saw about a dozen figures pointing shotguns into the air, firing at regular intervals. Standing on a slab of concrete out here in the Mesquite Desert, the scraggly little oasis in a wasteland north of Vegas, they were clustered with their shotguns, about 50 yards away from a one-story concrete blockhouse, half-shaded by 10 or 12 trees and surrounded by cop cars, bike trailers, and motorcycles. Of course, the Mint Gun Club. These lunatics weren't letting anything interfere with their target practice. Here were about 100 bikers, mechanics, and assorted motorsport types milling around in the pit area, signing in for tomorrow's race, idly sipping beers and appraising each other's machinery. And right in the middle of all this, oblivious to everything but the clay pigeons flipping out of the traps every 5 seconds or so, the shotgun people never missed a beat. Well, why not, I thought. The shooting provided a certain rhythm, sort of a steady bass line to the high-pitched chaos of the bike scene. I parked the car and wandered into the crowd, leaving my attorney in his coma. I bought a beer and watched the bikes checking in. Many Husqvarnas, high-tuned Swedish Fireballs, also many Yamahas, Kawasakis, a few 500 Triumphs, Makos, here and there a CZ, a Persang, all very fast, super light dirt bikes. No hogs in this league, not even a Sportster. That would be like entering our grand Great Red Shark in the Dune Buggy competition. Maybe I should do that, I thought. Sign my attorney up as the driver, then send him out into the starting line with a head full of ether and acid. How would they handle it? Nobody would dare go out on the track with a person that crazy. He would roll in the first turn and take out 4 or 5 dune buggies. A kamikaze trip. What's the entry fee? I asked the desk man. $250, he said. But what if I told you I had a Vincent Black Shadow? He stared up at me, saying nothing, not friendly. I noticed he was wearing a .38 revolver on his belt. Forget it, I said. My driver's sick anyway. His eyes narrowed. Your driver ain't the only one sick around here, buddy. He has a bone in his throat, I said. What? The man was getting ugly, but suddenly his eyes switched away. He was staring at something else. My attorney, no longer wearing his Danish sunglasses, no longer wearing his Acapulco shirt, a very crazy-looking person, half-naked and breathing heavily. What's the trouble here? He croaked. This man is my client. Are you prepared to go to court? I grabbed his shoulder and gently spun him around. Never mind, I said. It's the Black Shadow. They won't accept it. Wait a minute, he shouted. What do you mean they won't accept it? Have you made a deal with these pigs? Certainly not, I said, pushing him along toward the gate, but you'll notice they're all armed, and we're the only people here without guns. Can't you hear that shooting over there? He paused, listened for an instant, then suddenly began running toward the car. You cocksuckers, he screamed over his shoulder. We'll be back. By the time we got the shark back on the highway, he was able to talk. Jesus Christ, how did we get mixed up with that gang of psychotic bigots? Let's get the fuck out of this town. Those scumbags are trying to kill us. And that is the end of chapter 4. I love you.